This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Bourne.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, decoy ducks and red herrings, sayings, urban legends and aphorisms.
So, Jules, what's your favourite saying?
I've got a few, actually, and some of them are pretty peculiar, but I'll leave the Irish ones for a little bit later. I quite like power corrupts, even though that's massively misquoted. And I don't know, as near as damn it is to swearing, I'm occasionally been known to say that.
My two favourites are, one of them is the full, you know, you say blood is thicker than water.
Yeah.
But actually the full quote is blood of the covenant is thicker than water of the womb. Apparently, I don't know, that may be wrong, but apparently there's the full saying, and I do like that because it actually turns the whole thing around, which is saying that the connections we make can be just as strong as the familial connections that we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
But my favourite saying, and I don't even know if it is a saying, it's just something that was said in my family, on the French side of my family, is pour te faire parler, qu'est-ce que ça marche? And for those of you who aren't fluent in French, that means to make you talk and look how it's working. And what would happen is that as a young child, you'd say, oh, why have you done this? You know, why have you put my toys away? Why have you said that I have to come in now? You know, things like that. Always questioning of why. And every time I'd ask why, the response would be, pour te faire parler, qu'est-ce que ça marche? So it's like, so why do I have to come in now? So that you'll complain and look how it's working. And I love that saying so much, because it's literally just a giant, I don't have to explain myself to you.
Well, if that's not a traditional saying, it should be one.
It should be. It's definitely one that I am going to keep on in the family. And I think that one thing that we can talk about today is sayings which are traditional within the sort of a cultural context. And sayings which actually sort of rise up within families and stay within families, because I think they're just as important.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, this was one I wanted to do because obviously I'm a complete word nerd.
Uh-huh.
And, well, yeah, call it like it is. And I was thinking about it, and so many of our sayings come from Chaucer and from Milton and from the Bible. Mm-hmm. And a load of them come from hunting terminology, believe it or not. But probably the most well-known ones that people don't even realise have come from this source and are massively misquoted or changed actually come from Shakespeare, of course, because Shakespeare did everything first.
Thanks, Will.
So a couple of Shakespeare ones. We think the game is afoot comes from Sherlock Holmes. It actually comes from Henry V.
Yep.
And bated breath. I think Shakespeare used that one a couple of times. Break the ice comes from Taming of the Shrew.
Mm-hmm.
Dead as a doornail, I think that's another Henry V one.
Yeah.
Be all and end all.
Yeah.
And then there's things like faint-hearted, live long day, fancy free. They're all from the Merry Wives of Windsor.
I mean, Shakespeare was amazing in that, because he really... I mean, it is incredible when you think about how the language, how we twisted language into what is now, I mean, if you listen to some sayings, you're like, that makes no sense. And then actually it makes complete sense, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's this ability to turn language to create a new meaning, which is just... which reflect, it's like making a new word out of the components that you already have. And I really, really like that. Because actually, sayings in that way, that's exactly how words and language work. When you consider actually the fact that a lot of the words that we use or place names are actually just descriptive. So they in themselves were pretty much actually not a saying, but they were a descriptive. For instance, like Sherwood means white forest. Yeah. Sher means white, and wood is obviously wood. Okay. Sherlock as a name is white hair or pale haired. And you dissect language in that way, and you realize that that is the fundamental of how words have been created. And Shakespeare did exactly the same thing. So he created these phrases, but he also, in doing so, created new words. So things like lovely, for instance, that was Shakespeare, wasn't it?
Yes. And things like in a pickle.
Yep.
All that glistens is not gold.
Yeah.
I think that might have been taken from a biblical verse as well. But yeah, I mean, he basically I think he was just sat there writing plays going, I can't think of a nice pat phrase for what I want to say, so I'm going to mix something up.
Yep.
Which is brilliant. And he communicated almost exclusively in metaphors. This is where I'm going to connect Shakespeare to Star Trek. It's going to be an exciting ride, guys.
Excellent.
There is an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation where Jean-Luc Picard needs to communicate with some aliens on a planet that they basically need to resupply at. Yep. And they can't understand what the aliens are saying. The aliens are speaking English,
mm-hmm.
or rather they're hearing the English translation, but the words are making no sense, as in, you know, the things they're saying don't seem to be related to anything else. And then eventually they work out that the aliens communicate exclusively in metaphor.
Ah.
So Jean-Luc Picard ends up communicating them with the Epic of Gilgamesh.
That's
as a metaphor,
so cool.
Because he ends up stranded basically somewhere, not quite out on the desert, but out in the wilderness, and he communicates the bit of the Epic of Gilgamesh where you've got Gilgamesh and his mate, who I can't remember the name of, unfortunately. Sorry, it's gone. I've only got so much space up there. particularly as I'm getting older.
Jules.
Oh, I don't know. So he uses that to communicate that he wants to establish a partnership with this alien that he's been stranded with so that they can get back to their respective communities, their cultures.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it's a favourite episode, but it's really interesting. And then talking about how Shakespeare communicates almost exclusively a metaphor in some places. It's kind of like, wow, it's like that episode of Star Trek. So there you go. That's how my brain works.
It is true. And it's, the interesting thing about sort of metaphors and the way that that's communicated is that it actually speaks to the way in which we process information. And sorry, this is going to sound so convoluted.
No, go away. I've strapped myself in.
But if you think about kind of the way that we communicate things, and the way that we understand certain things. So, you know, if I could say, oh, I'm feeling a bit sleepy, you know, and you said, you're feeling a bit sleepy, that could actually entail completely different things.
Yep.
I could use the word sleepy to mean absolutely bone weary and totally exhausted. And you could use the word sleepy to mean a little bit tired, but actually still able to function. You know?
Yeah.
So that's one level of language, which means that we accept the meaning of words a little bit differently based on our experiences. But when it comes to metaphors, whilst being a little bit more vague and bringing in all these other mixtures, can actually be oddly more specific. Because they trigger an understanding in our brains of something which is almost more fact-based. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see where you're going, and I think that sort of gives you why sayings are misquoted and why they evolve over time to mean something completely different.
Yeah.
And the expression at the beginning, blood is thicker than water, which you said you quoted the entire quote for, actually now means that, you know, you stick with your family, not with any more transitory contacts you make. Whereas originally it actually meant way more the opposite direction.
Yes, exactly.
So historical context changes things greatly, and these things, you know, the really good sayings last for hundreds and possibly thousands of years if you take some of the biblical ones.
Yeah.
So they started from a very specific event, if you like.
Yeah, and but that, again, that is the interesting thing, is that you have these sayings which last forever when our language is constantly changing.
Yes,
and that goes to show the power of these sayings in their ability to communicate an idea, which is more specific than words in the language, which will change over time. But of course, these sayings do change. But I mean, the reason blood is thicker than water has changed is because half of the saying was taken out, which is the blood of the covenant is thicker than water of the womb. If I said that, you would understand exactly what I was talking about, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Once, you know, you'd unscrambled it a little bit. It's a bit weird, but you know what I mean? It's easy to understand. And I really, really like that. And you know, like you look at dead as a doornail, right? What does that even mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, according to Dickens, you know, a coffin nail should be the deadest piece of ironmongery.
Exactly. But it is interesting in that sense, though, because dead as a doornail, we wouldn't necessarily get that unless we already had the context behind it. Because, again, it's the way that the language is being used within that context. I wonder if there's actually a way of changing the language within dead as a doornail to make it applicable for the modern day.
Oh, possibly.
Possibly. We're not going to do it now. but it is really interesting, and I really do like sayings. And my favourite thing, actually, is to, when I go to different places, is to learn different sayings or little different terms which don't actually translate entirely well.
Yeah.
And I really, really like doing that. And I think that actually when it comes to fiction, creating sayings and things like that can actually be a huge part of world building.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to put enough context in that people can work out what you're actually saying.
Yeah.
Unless you really want to be inscrutable for that character.
Yeah.
But yeah, it can give a real flavour of character and place, can't it?
Yeah.
Going back to sayings that have been completely misunderstood, curiosity killed the cat.
Yes.
Now, there's a pairing. Curiosity killed the cat, but the satisfaction brought it back.
Yeah.
And the suggestion is that if you stick your nose in someone else's business, it's going to get you into trouble. But on the other hand, if you find out what you're trying to find out, then, you know, it'll be worth the trouble. The original saying was actually care killed the cat. And for care, it means worry.
Oh. I did not know that.
It is a completely different saying. And then
that's really cool. I did not know that at all.
No, I like that one, but that's the one that always bugs me. When I say... I was going to say, obviously, being an inquisitive child, people just kept used to say to me, curiosity killed the cat. And I'm like, how do you find out stuff you want to know? And I don't mean like prying into other people's business, just generally stuff you want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Without trying to find it out.
Exactly. But the thing is that curiosity didn't kill the cat. It is through curiosity that we've evolved into the way that we are now.
Yes.
Like, it's like curiosity killed the cat, but we're not cats.
So, yeah, it made no sense. The other one was, hell hath no fury to a woman scorned. Actually, this is a misquote from the 18th century playwright William Congreve, and the actual quote from the play is, heaven has no rage like love to hatred turned, nor hell a fury like a woman scorned. Which changes the context of it somewhat.
It does, actually.
Because it's not a case of women are irascible, unreasonable creatures and you don't want to get on the wrong side of them, or you'd expect them to act out.
Yeah.
It's more a case of, you know, you can't account for people who... if you take someone's affections and twist them to the point where they now hate you, you better be prepared for some fallout.
Yeah. You kind of deserve it. I think one of my favourite sayings I'm just trying to think of sort of sayings that you get across the board. One that you sort of see a lot, we saw a lot in karate, which we sort of, we really liked, was Nana Korobi Yaoki, which is fall down 7 times, get up 8. So have you heard that in the martial arts context?
I've heard it in riding, actually.
Yes.
It's slightly different. It's like 7 falls makes the rider, the other 93 are just for fun.
Yeah. I do remember being told that 7 falls makes the rider. But yeah, Nana Korobi Yaoki fall down 7 times, get up 8. And I actually kind of really like that. It's the idea that if you keep getting up, then you'll always have gotten up more times than you will have fallen.
Yeah.
Which I just, that is actually sort of inspiring, actually. I really do like that as a proverb.
Okay, a biblical one that is misquoted. Money is the root of all evil. It's actually, from the Old Testament, mm-hmm. For the love of money is the root of all evil. So apparently the Old Testament didn't have a problem. Well, the saying that people say is money is the root of all evil. But it's actually, for the love of money is the root of all evil.
Oh!
So if you make money your god, then yes, you are going to be adding to the evil of the world, as it were.
Oh, that's very cool, actually. See, we're really... I say we, you are really pulling in this information. That's really cool. I did not know that one at all. That's amazing.
Okay, there's a couple here that are odd sayings in English.
Yeah.
You can say if you've heard them before. I've explained the origins of humble pie before, haven't I?
Explain it again.
Okay. This is going back to sort of the 1500s and 1500s anyway. Everybody ate together. The servants, the serfs, everybody sort of all ate in the same place.
Yeah.
And how important you were depended on where you sat with regard to the salt. What they used to do when they brought down a deer was everybody did get some, mm-hmm. but the bits that were left over, you know, the offal, the offcuts, the things that weren't quite so nice, used to get chopped up with some spices and things and made into pies. And the offcuts were called umbles. So they were made into umble pies, which were given to the poor people, the servants, and everyone below that. And then at some point we added an H to it. So to eat humble pie is to do something beneath your dignity because you were eating poor person's food.
Ah, okay. That's really cool.
And because I'm a complete nerd, I have whenever I open a new project in Scrivener, I have an umble file, which is where all the offcuts go.
You're such a nerd! That's so cool! Oh, that's it. I'm going to create an umble file as well now. That's really cool. An umble document.
Yep, these things I do for my own amusement. I swear, if I die and someone inherits my laptop, it's going to be, what the hell is this? Why is there an umbles file in every single one of these projects?
I think a saying that I really like in French is I'm trying to translate it. The clothes do not make the monk.
Yeah, I think I've heard something similar.
Which I... It's kind of like, it's like the inverse of do not judge a book by its cover. But like, rather than saying it could be better than you think, it's actually saying, look, just because they look pious doesn't mean that they are, if that makes sense. It's like the inverse of saying, no, don't think someone's necessarily great, they could be terrible, rather than don't think someone's terrible, they could be great. but yeah, I really, really do like that. And there is I was looking it up to sort of find the to kind of find the context, and I couldn't. But I did find out that there is an offcut, an umble, from the saying. No, it's not an upcut. It was sort of recreated by a philosopher, Plutarch, who came up with his own rendition of the phrase. And it's le barbe ne fait pas la philosophie, and it's the barbe, a beard does not make a philosopher.
Okay, I like that.
Which I like, because it kind of, it puts it in a sort of an academic tone, which I feel is kind of appropriate, because it's saying, rather than looking at the sort of the piousness of it, it's like saying, just because you have a title, just because you have this, just because you're reading this heavy book, doesn't necessarily make you smart, or doesn't necessarily make you an authority. I just like that. It is an interesting phrase, and I feel like it's one that could be brought over into English. Because the French are very judgmental people. And I say that with love, as a French person. But we are very, very judgmental people.
Okay. Here's a few good, well, UK ones. You have to be a bit loose as to whether they're English or not, because, you know, with so much of the world speaking English.
Yeah.
Right, kick the bucket, which usually means to die.
Yep.
It actually comes from a lynching.
Oh,
so
no.
To have someone kick the bucket out from under you means you're going to drop and, you know, your neck will break or you'll strangle.
No, Jules.
So that's where that one comes from.
Oh, dear.
And then there's bite the bullet. That's dates back to World War One when we didn't have anaesthetic to operate on the soldiers, so they literally bit down on bullets while having things amputated, etc.
Oh, yeah, I think I did know about that. But I forgot about it because I didn't want to think.
Okay, piss poor.
Yes.
That's to do, in the 18th century, a relatively reliable source of income, if you had nothing else to do, was to collect dog poo off the street or urine from horses and things and take it to the tanneries where they would pay you a small sum for it.
Right.
So if you were piss poor, then you were...
So if you were piss poor...
Yep. your living was collecting excrement.
That's great.
This one I really like. You've heard the phrase, fly by the seat of your pants.
No, that is not a phrase that I've heard.
You've never heard that?
I have never heard that.
Have you never, in writing terms, heard plotter and pantser?
No.
Oh my god, okay. Right, well, to fly by the seat of your pants is basically to make things up as you go along. So in writing terms, when people say, are you a plotter or a pantser, are you someone who plans it in advance, or do you just get in there and see what happens? Okay, now, fly by the seat of your pants comes from a pilot, or rather the headline about a pilot, called Douglas Corrigan, who in 1930, I think it was, did a 29-hour flight from Brooklyn to Dublin, which would have been fine, but he'd had his flight plan rejected 2 days before and gone anyway, and he wasn't aiming for Dublin, he was aiming for California.
Okay.
On disembarking from the plane, he said that he thought his compass had packed up. If you think about the sort of state most of the planes were back then, 29 hours in the sky, flying by yourself, is pretty scary stuff. So he really was flying by the seat of his pants.
Oh my god.
So that's where that one comes from.
That's very cool. No, I just suddenly thought of another French one. It's not a French saying, but it's the use of a French word, which within the context that you use it has a completely different meaning. And it's actually a swear word.
Okay.
So if you say merde to someone, it means shit.
Yes.
we became very serious then.
Well, you can reliably expect me to know how to swear in most languages.
No, I know, but it's just the fact that we just very, very quiet. Yes. It means
shit.
And then just, yes, it does. Yes, good. I'm glad we've established that. But when I was doing my exams, my mum would call me and she'd be like, oh, I love you, sweetheart. Merde. And I was like, excuse me? And it's what you say, it's good luck.
Ah.
And
that's weird.
So, I know. So my mum would say merde to us. To say good luck. And not only would she say merde to us, she'd say merde quadruple. Or you know, she'd say triple shit. A million shit to you, my children. I love you. You're like, what? And it means good luck. I guess it's sort of like break a leg. Now, can you explain break a leg, Jules?
Not really. I just know that you say break a leg rather than good luck because theatre folk tend to be quite superstitious.
Yes. I am very, very curious as to why now.
Break a leg used to, I think it was probably to do with dancing. You wished somebody the thing that wouldn't happen to them. So if you wished it for them, it wouldn't happen. Whereas if you wished them good luck, then they'd have bad luck. That's what I mean about theatre performing people tending to be quite superstitious.
Yeah, but it is. Break a leg, apparently, is actually connected with meld. So it was, before it was break a leg, you wouldn't say break a leg, you'd say meld with the professional dancers. Huh? So it was something to do with that. I have no idea why meld was good luck. But I do like the idea that, and apparently in Spanish the phrase is mucha merda, which means lots of shit. So I have no idea why.
Okay. Here's a weird British one. It's actually not weird when it's explained. It's brass monkeys.
Yeah, that is weird. Explain.
Well, the actual saying is, it's cold enough out there to freeze the balls of a brass monkey. That's actually not as dicey as you think it is. Ships' cannonballs used to be stacked on a brass structure called a monkey. And in Arctic temperatures, the brass used to contract and the balls would fall off.
Right.
So it's actually quite innocent, but it sounds really bad.
Do you know about the dog's bollocks?
It's kind of a personal thing to ask, isn't it?
Jules? What do you know about the dog's bollocks?
It's an alternate sort of bee's knees or cat's pyjamas, isn't it?
Yeah, but where did that come from? Bees don't have knees. Cats don't have pyjamas.
Well, if you have a stripy cat.
Those are pyjamas!
It's obviously not pyjamas, but, you know, it's one of those things where you look at it and think, oh, it kind of looks like he's wearing pyjamas. I know, that's weird. Okay, skeleton in the cupboard.
Now that comes from Bluebeard, doesn't it?
Actually, it comes from body snatching.
Oh!
Because obviously dissecting corpses was illegal right up until the late 19th century. So they used to have to hide corpses in the cupboard, basically. And it was a bit of embarrassment if you were caught with them.
That is amazing! I mean, you know, I'm not all for body snatching or anything like that, but it's an amazing story! I'm learning so much today!
One my dad always used to say that always used to really confuse me is happy as a sand boy.
How happy can sand boys be? According to Anakin, sand is awful.
Well, this is a Bristolian saying, because the pubs used to use fine sand from sea caves spread on the floors of the pubs to soak up spilled beer.
And other things.
And other things, yeah. We won't go into the other things. But the boys who used to collect the sand from the sea caves were paid partially in drink and were very merry or happy a lot of the time.
Because of it.
Yes.
That's really cool. So do you have any sayings which are just from your family? Like terms that sort of, you know, we've all got one. I say we've all got one. A lot of families have got them where someone said something and you've never let it go and you've just kept that phrase. Do you have a phrase like that in your family?
There's a, whether it's something that's never let go. Mm-hmm. What, do you just mean something personal?
Yeah, or something that, you know, was either you use exclusively or was just something that...
I'll explain. I don't think you're going to remember these adverts because I think this is pre you being like an adult. But this is something that got started between my sisters, my dad, and I. And I think my mum thinks we're all speaking a completely different language sometimes. But now when dad wants to say someone's being stupid, he says dime bar.
Dime bar.
I don't know if you remember dime bars, but there was an advert a long time ago now, it must be well over 10 years, if not longer, where you had someone saying, yes, have a dime bar, smooth on the outside, crunchy on the inside. And it had a very inappropriate, probably, stereotype of like a village idiot there going, I likes armadillos, crunchy on the outside, smooth on the inside. Instead. Which is all really, really silly, but it was one of those ones that just stuck in the family. So now whenever everyone's being stupid, someone will say, dime bar. So there you go.
Incredible.
Yes, incredible as in you couldn't believe it.
We've got one in the family as well. We say sweet drums.
Okay.
And it is simply because my mother was French, and she would get sayings wrong every now and again. And so in trying to say sweet dreams, she said sweet drums. And we never let it go. Oh my god, did we ever let it go? She was like, sweet drums, dreams. And I said, oh, sweet guitars to you. Sweet, sweet tambourines. Sweet harps. And every night, it was just a different instrument. She'd be trying to get us to go to sleep, but it would just be a competition to name as every instrument you could possibly imagine, you know, up until 12 o'clock at night. Sweet, sweet, triangle. Sweet, please go to bed. Please.
The sweet mother of God, shut up.
Oh my god, these children are monsters. And yeah, and I really, really like it. It brings me a lot of comfort. Sweet drums. So we say sweet drums. And it means sweet dreams. And that's just a saying that I'm going to continue on in my family. I refuse to let it die because I feel like it's part of my Anglo-French heritage. Fringlish.
Okay, I've got quite a good one. You've heard the phrase sweet FA?
No.
Oh my god, it's almost like we're completely different generations here.
It is almost like that, Jules. Like you're over a decade older than me.
Yes. Okay, so sweet FA, most people think that means sweet fuck all. Actually, it comes from sweet Fanny Adams, which which apparently is funnier to you than sweet fuck all for some reason. Okay.
All right.
It gets way better than this. That's supposed to say there's nothing. There's nothing there.
Right.
So if you were to say, has your boss done anything about that complaint yet? If you say sweet FA, that means he's done sod all about it.
Right.
But Fanny Adams was the victim of an 1867 murder case. She was cut into pieces and thrown into the River Wey.
Oh.
The broadside ballad at the time referred to her as sweet Fanny Adams, which actually was some wit's double entendre about her being, you know, this sweet young woman, but also sweet was a euphemism for stew.
Oh no, Jules.
you couldn't make this stuff up, really.
Oh no. Oh no.
I feel I've brought all the goriest ones today.
I feel like actually most of the origin of a lot of sayings are very gory, if you look at them. Actually.
I haven't even got onto the Irish ones yet. They're very weird.
Oh, yes, yes. Let's get onto the Irish ones.
Right, okay. This is one that I like, and it's one my gran used to say. 'Tis often a person's mouth that breaks his nose.
That's a great one.
I thought that was, you know, that's always sort of stayed with me. And I don't think that needs much explaining, really.
No.
I also quite like, you've got your own growing to do no matter how tall your father was.
That's actually a really nice one.
Yeah. They get a lot worse than this. I've started with the good ones.
Oh, right. You're easing us into it.
Yeah. The weird thing with Irish sayings, this is not to be mistaken for, you know, Irish affirmations. Mm-hmm. Because the affirmations in Irish are something completely different. But these are kind of like, they could be taken two different ways. Mm. Or they could be taken as complete opposites, which is sort of a very weird, particular Irishy type thing. Mm. Okay, so one that could be taken both ways. 'Tis better to be lucky than wise. Now, that could mean it's better to be lucky because better things will happen to you.
Yeah.
But it's a case of, well, if you're not wise, then maybe you think you're lucky, but you're not. But you're too stupid to realise that you're not actually very well off, so it's better to be stupid.
It's almost kind of tied in with the idea of ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Do you know where ignorance is bliss comes from?
I think that's a Shakespeare one. And it's not quite ignorance is bliss, it's something else, isn't it? That's a shortened form of it.
I'm going to Google it. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Anyway, you continue. When I make a discovery, I'll tell you.
All right, you'll like this one.
Okay.
The skin of an old sheep is on the rafter no sooner than the skin of a new one.
All right, talk me through that, please.
Basically, if you're making a sheepskin, it doesn't really matter if it comes from an old sheep or a new sheep, and you might have stretched it on the rafter beams. What that's saying is, death comes for us all. It doesn't matter if you're old or young.
Ah, oh, how typically optimistically Irish.
Yes. One I particularly like, and I've got a feeling this one might have evolved sort of across the pond with the Irish communities there. A turkey never voted for an early Christmas.
Yep. That's wow, we're really going there. Also, I found out ignorance is bliss doesn't come from Shakespeare, comes from a Thomas Gray in Ode on a Distant Prospect of Eton College.
Ah, okay.
And the final phrase of the poem is, and happiness too swiftly flies, thought would destroy their paradise. No more where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise.
Ah, it's the folly to be wise would be the bit I was thinking of, yeah.
Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise.
Which has a slightly different connotation to ignorance is bliss.
It does, actually. It kind of adds a bit more of a sadness to it, actually, as well, because it gives this idea that because it shows a willfulness to be ignorant.
Yeah.
So to be purposefully ignorant because being wise is not within one's favour. So that's a bit darker, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, okay. Speaking of dark, come on, give us some more.
Okay, there's a couple that my granddad used to say. Beware the anger of a patient man, except she used to say quiet man.
Yeah, I've heard that one, and I think that, yes, I can agree with that.
A friend's eye is a good mirror. Taken literally, that's really gross.
Yeah, we were going to say, please, to our listeners, dear listener, do not take these sayings literally. Please do not gouge out your friend's eyes. To use them as a mirror, you will find they are very poor mirrors in that respect. But yes, when it comes to that, that's actually a really nice saying.
Yeah.
Your eyes make excellent mirrors, Jewel.
So do yours.
Thank you. Maybe we shouldn't see each other for a while.
Maybe not. Okay, some of the slightly more inscrutable ones used to say, everyone's a friend until a cow goes into his garden. Presumably this is to do with somebody's cow wandering in and destroying your vegetables. Falling out with a neighbour. And this one, I'm still not 100% sure what this means. There was never an old slipper, but there was an old stocking to match it.
Okay, so, alright, I don't get that.
I think it's a case of, where you see a wise old man, there's a wise old woman with him.
Oh,
I think. But it can also, I would say that's one of those ones that could mean something completely different as well. As in, you may have worn out a pair of shoes doing this, but you've come by the knowledge honestly.
Yeah. I quite like that. But yeah, it's the behind every great man is a great woman or something like that.
Yeah. a lamb's bleat says more than a dog's bark.
Okay.
Basically, if you're subtle, you're more likely to get something accomplished.
Okay. That's actually an interesting one, yeah. Go on.
The cat is dignified until the dog comes by. It's like, basically, everyone's got someone who pisses them off.
Yeah.
You'll like this one. Any man can lose a hat in a fairy wind.
You said it before me! Yay!
I did. I'm going to have to start paying into the F jar at this rate.
You are.
basically, some things are beyond our control. An old broom knows the dirty corners, which I really like, but it's actually a way of saying wisdom comes with age.
I've got one, actually. Apple of my eye. Do you know where that comes from?
I thought that was a Shakespeare one as well.
It might be, but do you know what it means to be the apple of someone's eye? Well, apparently, in Old English, this is according to the source that I found, it might be completely wrong, but the pupil was actually once called the apple, or it could be referred to as the apple in the eye.
Okay.
And obviously, when you look in someone's face, when you look into someone's eyes, the bit where you can see your reflection is in, obviously, the pupil, because it's a dark bit, so there's a contrast, so you can see your reflection in it.
Yes.
So the idea of being the apple of someone's eye is therefore something that they enjoyed looking at a lot and was often in the apple of their eye. Apparently. Okay. I just thought that was neat.
Okay, this one is going to make probably not very much sense at all, but this is something that I think I was about 8 and I was whistling at the dinner table when both my grandmothers were over. And both my grandmothers, the Scottish grandmother and the Irish grandmother, both told me to be quiet, and then both of them managed to say word for word together, "A whistling woman and a crowing hen will do no good to God nor men." And this was all part of the whole "you're not being very ladylike" thing, obviously. which is largely where that was going. But it was so weird because they didn't agree on an awful lot of things, so that for them to suddenly say absolutely in tandem. It worked. I didn't whistle at the dinner table again.
Sorry. Okay, let's talk about actually fictional things.
Yes.
In the last sort of few minutes. So have you ever created any idioms or sayings for your books?
I think because most of mine have been urban fantasy up to date, they've mostly been adapted sayings.
Yeah.
So instead of saying "fly on the wall," I think I've said "sparrow in the roof beams" because it was a bit of historical fiction.
I like that, actually, "sparrow in the roof beams." That's nice. I've come up with a few, obviously, for the Hamartia cycle.
I was going to say, we can talk about you sexualising vegetables again.
What? No! One is, if something is a cuckoo's nest.
Yeah.
So they say, that's a cuckoo's nest of a plan, which means it's non-existent, because cuckoos don't have nests, or it's fictional. Another one is, oh Christ, they've just gone all out of my head, but I do have a few. I've adapted one from the French, which is, "you couldn't find a blackbird in a glass of milk." Which my mother used to say to me, because I'm really bad at finding stuff in cupboards. And I just kind of want to talk about the particulars of how you create idioms. And this is, you know what, listeners, we're actually going to give you a task now, all right? We're going to give you homework. We want you to create your own idioms, your own little sayings. And when you have got one, feel free to throw it in our direction, leave it in a comment, tweet it to us, because we'd love to see them, okay? So this is how I create idioms. I tend to think that the best thing you can look at is look at nature. and look at the particulars of nature and look at certain behaviours which we just all know about. So the reason a cuckoo's nest of a plan works is that even though someone necessarily doesn't know about the context of that, through analysis of the saying, you can get the meaning. So if I say a cuckoo's nest to you, Jules, what do you say?
What, in response to a cuckoo's nest?
Yeah, well, I just say, I start talking about cuckoo's nests. What do you mean?
I'll be like, hang on a minute, they don't have nests.
Exactly. Which therefore means that you can uncode it. So I think that's the best way, is to find something which is very, very typical and allows you to sort of draw on a pre-existing knowledge to create a new saying, you know? So you could say, the snow will come as surely, or you could say, she'll come as surely as the daffodils in spring. You know, that could be a saying. Quite proud of that one. Just made it up off the fly. Unless it's already a saying, I don't know.
I've not heard that one particularly.
There we go.
I did do a weird Western recently, and I said, or rather the character said, would shoot your household gods to see the piss trickle down your leg.
That's so cool.
Which doesn't need an awful lot of decoding.
No.
But it does tell you quite a lot about the character.
Yes, it does. That's actually really, really, really good. I really like that, actually. So this is us giving you your assignment, listeners. Create an idiom, and then please send it to us, because we'd love to see it.
Yes. Of course, well, I was going to say, we might not steal them. I mean, we won't steal them. Sorry. Ah, damn it.
Damn it, Jules.
See through our paper-thin plan. all joking aside, we'd love to see them. It's really interesting to see how other people's brains work, for example.
Yeah.
Did not mean that to sound quite so sinister.
Well, I've got another one which I wrote for, another one which is someone says, if you're silt of the river, can you have an idea of what that means? If someone says, well, you're just because you're silt of the river.
Well, it sounds like salt of the earth, but, I mean, silt's not necessarily a desirable commodity in a lot of situations.
You exactly got it right. So, yeah, so it's salt of the earth, but it's the idea. It's just that they're not salt of the earth. It's just someone who sort of knows the river, but it's sort of silt of the river. You know, you're connected with that area of the world, but they're not trying to compliment them, so... Just because you're silt of the damn river doesn't mean you know anything. So yeah, so that's another one that I was quite proud of. And I think we're actually running out of time.
We have talked about a lot of sayings and a lot of the origins of sayings, and I think, I don't know, it's a good starting place for looking at, I suppose, etymology, but also how the evolution of language works.
Yes.
Because one thing that used to get to me was my sister, I used to say something, my sister would say, you made that up. As in, you made the word up. And I'm thinking, all language is made up. We had to start somewhere. We didn't just start with pointing and saying, ugh, you know?
Yes.
But if you want a set of books that are, you know, pretty good places to go, you might try, I can't remember the author at the moment, but the Etymologicon, which is a good one. You can also try Albert Jack's books. There's Shaggy Dogs and Black Sheep, and also Phantom Hitchhikers. And he's done a series of others, I think White Elephants and Red Herrings as well. Ooh. And they're very, very good places if you just want to dip in and out looking for certain phrases and things.
Now, before we go, it's time for the Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week. And I'm actually going to do this one. So this is actually for a couple of movies, which I really recommend everyone watches. Now, you could argue that it's not really speculative fiction, but there is a talking bear, so it's speculative fiction. I am, of course, talking about the Paddington movies. I watched both recently, and not only was I pleasantly surprised by the quality of the film, they were two films that I genuinely and completely enjoyed. I found that they were not only highly entertaining, but they were quite moving. The acting was excellent. There was a brilliant cast. And I just really, really liked them. So I highly recommend the Paddington movies to all of our listeners. If you haven't watched it yet, it really is worth a watch. And it's an excellent family film.
Awesome. I've not seen them myself. But I would definitely say Paddington Bear is speculative fiction.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Bear turns up at Paddington Station. A suitcase full of marmalade sandwiches. That's speculative fiction right there.
And on that note, guys, we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.